Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the founder of Atom Ventures, and we provide CTO service and CFO service to entrepreneurs and small businesses. Today, I'm here with Raj Mendir. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody.
And we're going to be talking about rebounding or bouncing back from failure. So the idea here is that obviously businesses, as an entrepreneur, you find it, you know, failure is obviously is a nasty word. And what we want to try and do is demystify, you know, what the issues around failure, and it's not a bad thing in all circumstances. So, Rog, let's start with your background.
Sure.
You're the founder of Whipped at the moment. So
yes,
how did you get there? And, you
know, I had a bit of a journey, which has been very exciting since coming out of university back in 2009. So almost over 10 years ago now, graduated from the LSE, Red Accounting and Finance, and went straight into work as a business consultant, working with a telco, which was absolutely exciting. Learned a hell of a lot during my time there. And what was great is being part of a very, very small team within a pretty big organization. Had plenty of learning opportunities. And then I made my way through a couple of different other opportunities in the working world, in the project management field, account management, and ending up in working with sort of M&A style patent transactions, which was fantastic, where I delivered most of the client relationship management work.
So what made you decide to move from that to become an entrepreneur?
So it was towards the back end of my time with the patent brokerage business, where a good friend of mine from the LSE, we'd made a couple of investments successfully, and it was time he started pushing me to sort of jump off the corporate ladder and look into the business world. He comes from very much an entrepreneurial family, and so he was really keen to sort of explore different opportunities. A couple of the opportunities that were brought to the table: estate agency in West London, which wasn't overly keen on pursuing, and we went and took a look at a bar in Richmond, which, while is very, very nice, again, there was not much scope for sort of growth beyond that single bar.
So you weren't looking at tech businesses as such; you were looking more kind of bricks and mortar, actual.
We're looking more at service businesses, essentially. Right. And so where we landed up was banking recruitment. Both of us, LSE grads, come from a finance background. Recruitment's got a certain reputation.
Yeah.
But we thought, you know, why not? Let's take a market, let's take an opportunity, and a challenging one, and tackle it.
So what did you see was the opportunity there for you?
Opportunity was, okay, so you've got banking as a one vertical within recruitment, but there's so many different industries you can recruit for. And so there was a lot of scope for growth within the business. And that's what really appealed to me about recruitment above and beyond.
So taking a template for recruitment and then applying that to different industries, right?
Exactly. And a template, I would say, is probably quite a nice loose term to use. We dabbled into many different industries before selling the business 5 years later. And along the journey, someone asked me why recruitment, and or whether I had any experience. And actually, I had no experience in recruitment whatsoever, apart from recruiting internally within companies. I mean, me being very much of a people's person, it seemed quite the natural fit. And someone who'd been in the recruitment game for 15 years said to me, quote unquote, "You've got balls of steel to enter recruitment as your first business."
So as neither of you had any kind of experience in recruitment before?
Absolutely none. Okay. Absolutely none. So we started from ground zero and really sort of learned the ropes and tackled the industry sort of head on, really. And it was an exciting journey. When you're doing it with a close friend, it's always good fun. When you're sort of trying to build something together.
Yeah, for sure. So how did that journey start, in the sense that was everything, I mean, well, there must have been challenges obviously to begin with, but did you kind of get over those challenges quickly? You know, you obviously got the knowledge quickly to start growing and building it. So how did that initial progression, you know, how did it pan out?
Yeah, so I guess it was more of a case of learning from others who had been in the market, right? Talking to other recruiters, sort of figuring out how they tackle certain challenges, what are the biggest obstacles that they faced while running this in parallel, sort of learning along the way. I'd say the biggest headache within recruitment, or the toughest part, is breaking down doors.
Right.
And breaking down doors within clients. But I mean, both of us come from very much a relationship management background, and so developing the relationships was our approach, which is slightly different to the typical recruitment industry approach, which is very much cold calling and hard sales. This is more like a relationship management approach, kind of like a softer sales approach.
So how long were things going well? I mean, how long a runway period did you have, kind of a honeymoon period? How long was that?
Most of the time we were owning the business. This one we had an exit at the beginning of last year, which was always a great thing.
So this is your success story, right?
This is the success story, but along the way, my business partner and I, we explored other opportunities.
Sure.
And along the way, we had a couple of failures. Not all ventures are successful. So we had our learnings, more of a people learning along the way, which has been the sort of trend in my failures I've had until today. I would like to call them failures, actually. I'd like to replace that. I'd like to call them experiences.
Sure. So, okay. So you've got your initial, you've done your first business,
yes,
set it up, you had an exit, successful, great. So then you're thinking, you know, I'm bulletproof, let's go and start the next venture. So what were the second and third ventures and the ones that failed? What were they? And you know, what was there a difference in the way you started them to the one that succeeded?
I would say the main difference was other people that we brought to the table.
Okay.
And sort of utilizing other people's networks, other people's perceived strengths.
So this is co-founders you're talking about?
Co-founders, yes. Right. I say perceived strengths.
So how did you know these people? I mean, how did you vet them?
Through introductions and through networks.
All right.
And so I guess when the biggest difference I noticed is that I'd known my first business partner for almost 8 or 9 years. And we built business on as another layer onto our friendship.
Right.
And friendship always came before business, which is always a nice way to play the game. Whereas other founders that we brought into the table for two of the other ventures that didn't go so well, it was quite apparent that the sort of the personalities that work together is probably a very, very crucial aspect to building a successful business.
This is interesting.
Concepts-wise, I mean, the concepts of the business were quite good, right? Educational learning for students at university about how to get into different markets and industries. But there was always disagreement amongst the sort of co-founders, and that wrapped up pretty quickly.
So I guess the question there is, how did you, obviously you met these guys through the network, but then, you know, going business is a marriage in many ways, right? So
exactly.
So how did you decide that these were the people that you wanted to go into business with?
So I guess I'm a pretty rapid decision maker. It works well in some cases. In other cases, for example, these scenarios, doesn't work so well because you need to take time, get to know the person before you actually get into bed with them. Because it's really crucial, like I said, getting into business is like getting into a marriage, right? And it's a tough one because on one hand, you want to build a business pretty quickly. On the other hand, you want to get to know the person before actually sort of walking that journey together. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg in terms of sort of getting the ball rolling. And I'm very much a sort of go to market. Once you have an idea, have a concept, pilot it, drive it.
So what I find interesting here is that when we talk to startups, we very much make sure we tell them that no matter what relationship with the person that you're starting a business with, always structure it so that if it all goes wrong, then you know exactly what you'll take out of that business. Or if you need to get rid of someone, you have that kind of exit strategy for them. Or if the business completely fails and, you know, let's say different people have put different amounts of money in, then you've got that, you know, you have that blueprint of how you're going to take that cash. Did you do any of that when you started with these new guys? Or did you just think that because it worked so well previously, it's going to work so well again?
Yeah, I mean, look, I very much work on a basis of trust,
and right,
a basis of my word, right, and the other person's word, which works well, again, like I say, but it can backfire against you in other scenarios. And I've been through the process where it has backfired on me. And yes, there was no sort of formal structure in place, more of like a handshake agreement in terms of how we would get the ball rolling with the first failure. And those handshakes with the external people obviously didn't mean very much in the end.
Right.
Okay. And so that's where I would say going forward to other people sort of getting to bed with people that they don't know so well is put a formality in place, get your paperwork in place, agree everything up front and get it down on paper. That's probably the most effective way to move forward.
So when did you start seeing things go wrong with the other with the second business?
The second business, I would say 9 months in. About 9 months in, yeah. So we got the proof of concept, brought a lot of fantastic people to the table, had some great ideas, and then more often than not, it became a bit of a money issue. Okay, we need to put in a little bit more money into the business, and that's really crunch time, right?
Right.
Money and time is always a case of, okay, coming together with ideas is always a fantastic thing. Everybody has great ideas, and but everybody has limited resource, time, money, network, etc. And when it comes to sort of probing those limited resources and trying to sort of extract that from your co-founders, that's when the real sort of that's when their sort of the depth of their relationship, the depth of their intention to grow the business really comes through.
The commitment, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. So did you guys have set roles as founders within the organization, in the sense that, you know, let's say you're the CEO, another person is the person who goes and raises capital, you know, did you have those kinds of things, or was it everyone doing everything?
So they were quite loosely carved out. Again, nothing formal, but we had an understanding of which co-founders were looking after which part of the business. And so when something wasn't delivered, there was clear accountability.
Right.
And again, that's when certain things can show through, is when someone sort of talks and says that they are able to bring something to the table, you can only go on the basis of their word.
So did you have kind of was there a governance structure you put in place to say, you know, meet board meetings every, you know, month or quarter or whatever it is?
I guess with every company you set up, you have this structure.
Yeah.
And we would meet very regularly in any case. I mean, even though we had a monthly board meeting, we'd be meeting every week.
So I guess what I'm trying to get at is that, okay, if you do it again, you definitely formalize the agreements with your co-founders to begin with. But then as you see something going wrong, is there something else you would do now? Like, let's say, for example, after the first couple of meetings, you figure out that this guy is not able to deliver what he's said he's going to deliver. You know, what did you do? Did you, was there any kind of penalties for that person? Or was it, you know, you just let it slide? And how would you do that again? How would you deal with that again?
Yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't very much of a punitive structure, right, where there'll be a penalty in place or something. I think there should be some sort of reprimand to the person who doesn't deliver what they say they'll deliver. Yeah. But at the same time, it's very difficult to capture something that's quite qualitative.
Sure.
Within paperwork and agreements. I mean, as an example, the second failed business, I mean, along the way, 18 months into the business, everything's going well. Again, when it comes to the funding side of things or the money side of things, that's when you really see how people function. They say money is the root of all evil, and sadly, I've seen it happen twice in businesses.
But I think in your case, you were able to raise the cash, right? But was it not enough money being raised? Or...
So in the second scenario, and I'll be very, very vague.
Fair enough.
Money was raised, wasn't executed because of certain reasons. And I think the real crunch point in the second failure, I'd really say, is that it was more of a case of being on the same page in terms of the time scale for sort of fundraising and really taking the business to the next level.
So did those people that you brought on board, had they had experience of running their own businesses previously, or were they green to that?
Very early stage.
Right.
I mean, very early stage.
So they
maybe a year or so's experience, whereas I had one success, one failure, and I was 5 years into the entrepreneur's journey.
Right. So that's kind of the big difference as well, right? So there's
absolutely,
you have to kind of teach them along the way, right?
Exactly. And going into business, right, you're taking a big risk. And I think if you try to be too risk averse, you're going to set yourself up for failure. Because in business, there's a certain amount of elasticity that needs to be had with the way you think and the way you make decisions, because not every decision can sort of be so thought through, right? Certain decisions need to be quite rapid, and you need to have that ability to think and make decisions very quickly. Okay, in certain scenarios, example, bringing people on board, you can make a pretty quick gut feeling decision, but that sort of a process, now I'd say I'll put a bit more time into it. But in general, making quick decisions within business is an asset. in many cases.
So is it a situation where you feel that the people who you brought on were probably not yet mature enough to do this, or that there wasn't enough, obviously there wasn't a structure in place, but it wasn't a sense that, you know, maybe there was more mentorship needed, or maybe there was a non-exec, did you kind of have a board or something like that that could give them the external mentorship that they needed to...
Yeah, I think actually do believe that if we had a certain board advisor or a certain mentor or a non-exec, that could have helped. It could have sort of supported conversations. But like I said, everything's a learning curve, right? And it's an experience. And I would do things slightly differently in the next ventures.
So, okay, you've got WIP now.
Yes.
And so you've started that up. So that's a fourth business now for you? Or the fifth? Fourth?
Fourth service business, yes.
Fourth service business, right? So how have you set this up differently? I think it's you, you're the only...
It's me, myself, and I,
right,
as a founder. Sort of founder, shareholder, director. And I wouldn't be so quick to bring shareholding partners into the business so quickly.
All right.
If that happens, it'll be probably later on down the line. Purely because, obviously, I've had my fingers burnt a couple of times, and they've been great experiences, great learnings. And off the back of that, I would bring people in a slightly different capacity. There are lots of different ways to structure, sort of bring people into the business. You can bring them in on a revenue share. It doesn't necessarily always have to be on an equity basis. Equity basis just means that they're tied into the business in theory, but then they're not always necessarily incentivized and aligned with your vision.
Right, so given you've been through this enough times now,
yes,
what questions are you going to ask of a co-founder that, of someone, if I say to you, Raj, I want to become part of your business, I'll give you 100 grand and we'll take 50% of the business or whatever it is, and I want to go off and do this with you, what questions would you ask of me to assess whether I'm the right person to work with you?
Firstly, I'd be quite jovial about my first question.
Right.
Because as I've seen, money has been, as much as people have been the issue, but money was an underlying sort of destructive factor.
Right.
I would say to you, Bearif, put your money where your mouth is, write me a PG, a personal guarantee, for £500,000, securitized against your house.
All right.
If you're willing to do that, then yeah, let's shake hands and get the ball rolling. But it just shows to you where, when people go into business, they want to become a co-founder. They're clearly business interested. They want to develop some sort of extra cash flow. They want to grow the business with you. They want to have that passion or that intention to sort of grow something and make something of an opportunity. So they clearly see the pound sign somewhere. But then at the same time, if someone's not willing to take the downside risk,
sure,
then it shows me that they're not willing to go through the entire entrepreneur journey.
Okay, so... Okay, risk is one element, but what? I could come in and give you the money and give you the guarantee, but then that's not necessarily all that you would need from that person, right? You want some additional skills, and so how would you then ensure that, you know, they're pulling their weight essentially?
Yeah, I would, in honesty, it would be a longer journey. I wouldn't quickly cut them into the business. I would ask them, what are you going to bring to the table? Let's brainstorm. Let's put together some sort of ideas in terms of how you can add value to the business. And once they walk me through how they're going to add value to the business, I would then make it a sort of milestone-based buy into the business per se. So only once they've added value do those shares get sort of triggered.
Yeah, so you would essentially be like a vesting.
Exactly.
Plan or whatever it is.
More so milestone vesting as opposed to time-based vesting, because someone can sit in the background for X number of years, not pull their weight through, and still get awarded their shares.
So I get that, like, one thing that you haven't touched on is that with the person, would there be a tactical person that you bring on? I mean, would you just bring on anyone who comes along and says, hey, I've got some cash, and I want to be part of your business, and I'm willing to do all of the things you say, are they still a good candidate for you to bring on board?
No, I think, because I'm a very much a grafter. I would want someone who's also equally as hardworking as I am, as heavy lifting. Money isn't exactly the be all and end all. If they're going to PG their house and whatnot and give that guarantee, no issue. But at the same time, the main ethos, the main sort of the main driver behind a successful business is sharing a vision and also the hardworking aspect. I mean, the early stages of any business, as you know, is tough. And it requires some real tenacity, real resilience. And you've got to be really tough in terms of taking on the failures or the losses as well as the wins, right? You get some wins, you lose some as well, but then the next day is a fresh day, right? You go into the office, you work on the next part of the business, and you continually grow and you fight through all these walls and come through and get through all these obstacles before you can actually develop a successful business.
So that's interesting. That taps on a number of things that, you know, I talk about in other podcasts and actually in general when you talk to other business owners, and that's mindsets, right? And it's not just about, do you have the mindset to grow, but do you have the mindset of what happens if you fail? It's very hard because a lot of people that come in from secure jobs, they'll be investment bankers or they'll be working in industry and they'll have that security or had that security. And they think it's easy to start a new business, right? But they don't understand that it's going to be 2 years before they might see any wage coming out or any real, like 4 years before they see any profit, right? And then the risk of failure is huge because so many companies fail. But then how do you assess that in another person is very, very hard, I think, unless you've known them for enough time.
Exactly. And this is, I go from experience. My first business partner, known him for eight or 9 years throughout university. We had plenty of drinking evenings together, as well as good times as well throughout university. And you get to know someone over time. You get to see how they operate. And it's always good to understand where their reason why they want to go into business and the rationale behind it. Do they want to just ride someone's success and someone's natural entrepreneurial flair? Or is it that they actually want to really put their blood, sweat, and tears into building something? Because castles aren't built overnight.
Sure.
And if you're not ready to sort of put in the hard work, lay the foundations, and slowly build a business, I don't think you're quite cut out to sort of go through the journey of the ups and the downs. One day you can have a fantastic day. The next day something can land on your desk and it will bring you right down to rock bottom, but then you've got to bounce back on a day-to-day basis, right? And that mindset is a really crucial aspect, and I totally agree with you. It's very difficult to ascertain whether someone has got the right mindset for going into business unless you've known them for long enough.
So what I find really interesting about this conversation is that the failures have come from top down, right? In the sense that it's been issues with business partners that have made, you know, tanked the business essentially. Whereas a lot of people will be suffering through lack of sales, lack of, you know, product market fit, lack of capital, cash flow. So those were challenges you didn't face, or did you face those challenges as well within those businesses?
Well, running multiple businesses, you tend to bootstrap. Yep. Lucky enough, I've been in that position to be able to. And so when it comes to lack of sales, sales is not always the number one priority. You know, going out to market, selling the business, selling your services, selling what you're offering. When I typically run a business, I would plan, I would grow and sort of hit the market in parallel. I wouldn't sort of try to get my product or service refined totally first before going to market. Thanks to my network, I'm able to sort of pilot and trial sort of concepts pretty quickly, go to market, test the market, see if there's a fit, and really grow the business from there. So I think while sales is always important, and there's an abundance of great salespeople out there, even if it's difficult to hire a salesperson, I'm lucky to have come from a journey in my own career where I've had some extremely good mentors and people to look up to and learn from that I've been able to sort of implement their ways of running business.
Sure.
And so the sales aspect is not always the be all and end all.
Because it's interesting though, because, you know, if you had a product that was good out in the market or a service that was good and it was well received, the question then people would ask is, well, why don't you just buy out your co-founder? Why don't you just get rid of them and find a way to sideline them rather than, you know, have a business fail because someone's not pulling their weight or not committed to the vision? Because you see that a number of times where founders just are, you know, pushed out of the business. Even there's lots of big examples of it, but even smaller examples in companies where, you know, you might get to 1 year, 2 year in, and then you don't share the vision, and one person takes that company over, and the other one goes and does something else. So why wasn't that a route for you guys?
Have you ever played chess?
I do, yes, sir.
Stalemate.
Right, okay.
Stalemate is the issue, and I think...
But that goes back to the structure then, because you didn't have that legal structure in place.
Actually, it was the legal structure that kind of permitted the stalemate. And so that was a good learning for me as well. Put a lot of time into the business, almost 2 years. But at the same time, look, you win some, you lose some. And time is probably one of the most scarce resource. And when you put your blood, sweat and tears into a business, that you just have to make a very firm decision to sort of cut your losses. Because...
But it's not, it's a big thing, because you had employees, and so you haven't to say to the employees,
exactly,
sorry, and they must have obviously sat there and said, well, we were going so well, and what happened?
I think it's the way you handle conversations with people.
Yeah.
I think emotional intelligence is probably one of the most crucial factors to sort of making a difference between a successful founder or CEO of a business and not so successful, because along your journey, you're going to meet all sorts of people from different cultures, backgrounds, personality types, and the adaptability. If your EQ is lacking, I think it makes your journey even tougher.
So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, I've been through wind downs as well, and
yes,
it's never easy when you've got a whole bunch of employees, like we had 50, 60 employees that suddenly lost their jobs, right, around the globe, and they were wondering what's happening. How did you feel about that process? How did you go through that process, and what kind of effect did that have on you as a founder?
Oh, it's a painful process. It's always a painful process, right? I like to think that I've got a good heart, but it's never nice sort of having the conversation with someone to say, look, we're going to have to call it a day. Be it business, be it personal relationship, be it whatever it is. But then I think if you put yourself in the other person's shoes and sort of speak to them in the language that they would want to hear from you, that's probably the most important thing before you have any conversation, is to understand the other person and adapt your conversation style to them before actually having that conversation. And these conversations are extremely tough.
So what I mentioned, yeah, so sorry, just to interrupt there. Sure. I'm interested in that, because you were the one doing all of this work, I guess, and your co-founder wasn't.
Yes.
Right? So basically that person was absent throughout this whole process. So again, that means that they really weren't that, not necessarily involved, but they didn't have that kind of knowledge of the people on the ground, right?
I'll say the knowledge, and also comes down to the passion and the real determination to make something of a business, right? And... you know, as another thing that I've experienced over both personal and business lives, is that people's true colors really come out when they don't get what they want.
Right. Okay.
And that's something that I see over time, which is quite a nice thing, because you observe how people are, and then you can adapt how they are. And as much as other people within the business may not have been as involved, I'm always more than happy to sort of pick up the sort of dog work, but it's not dog work. I think if you're going to go into business, if you're going to have people working for you, you need to have the sense of responsibility. You're going to have some ups, you're going to have some downs, and you're going to have some awkward conversations. Not everything is all smooth sailing. And to be able to have those difficult conversations it's a bit of an art, I would say.
Right? So are you still on good terms with the people that work for you over the last few businesses?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just this morning I dropped a WhatsApp to one of the employees, seeing how they are and hoping to catch up over a coffee. They work just around the corner and always maintain good relationships.
So yeah, would you bring the team back together in any, if you could, or not permitting you to anything
like for the skill set? There are certain people that I would bring back into my current business. Hmm. It's a very different nature of business, but there's certain people that I would bring back in purely because there's that people fit and they had the right mindset to work within a small business.
Right.
Running a small business takes a certain mindset, but also working within a small business, it also takes a specific mindset for an individual. They haven't got that determination, that grit, and that hardworking nature, then they'll soon sort of struggle within a small business, because you can get pulled from pillar to post, and one day you're doing a certain set of tasks, another day you're working on a separate project, and there's the lack of consistency so early in your career can be quite baffling for certain people.
Yeah.
Startups are chaotic. There's no two ways about it, right? Even building Whipped, the trajectory has changed a couple of times, but for various reasons, with startups, you do sort of toy around here and there. But in terms of people, there are a couple of people I would definitely bring back on.
So what did you, obviously you've had your failures, what did you learn about yourself? What was the kind of, what are the takeaways that you've had from failure? I mean, and also, so can you combine that with another question, is how did people look at you once you'd failed? What was their perspective of you? Were you seen as a failure, or was it?
No, I think over time, I've treated these experiences of failure differently. I've matured within the journey somewhat, and developed a significant amount of wisdom along the way. And obviously from the most recent sort of closure of company, or call it failure, I would say that was handled very, very well. And I actually received very, very good feedback from my old employees in terms of, both from previous companies as well as the most recent one, wherein one of my employees actually wrote an article, a thesis for her dissertation in organizational psychology. The thesis was on entrepreneurs bouncing back from failure,
right,
which is actually quite funny that we're having a podcast about this. And she, as soon as I mentioned to her that I'm closing the business and this is what I'm going to be doing next, she was quite inspired, but also at the same time she said, I'm not that surprised that you're sort of bouncing back so quickly, because I've seen how you've been the last 5-6 months with your various interests and involvements in different projects and companies. And she's a psychologist. I'm no qualified psychologist in that regard, but her observations were quite well aligned in terms of my ability to bounce back.
So what do you feel about yourself now? I mean, how do you feel about the failures?
Oh, they're great experiences.
Yeah.
There's so much to learn from every experience, good or bad, that you go through. And I think that's what helps you gain your wisdom. If you're going through life and having no failures, you're not going to be learning as much as the people who fall and learn to get back on their two feet by themselves.
So was it more important to have exited successfully, or was it more important to have failed?
In the early stages of my sort of business life, I think the failures have taught me more.
Right, okay.
The successes have taught me what I can do, it's shown me my abilities, but the failures have sort of taught me other business lessons, sometimes the hard way.
So let's spend some time talking about Whipped. It's an opportunity to kind of promote your business. So,
absolutely.
So what is Whipped? What does it do? And what kind of services do you provide for it?
So Whipped, quite a loose term, I'd call it a sort of management consultancy, where we provide a variety of different consulting services. We have a very lean operation, working with a few different partners and so on and so forth. So providing management consultancy, effectively working with companies, startups and smaller businesses to help them minimize the cost of their operations. And the way we do this is we've got quite a varied team on the ground in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, which is where all my family's from. And so we help deliver certain services or certain operations for clients at a lower cost, taking advantage of the sort of labor cost differential between London and Malaysia.
And KL's got a very good education system as well, high level of English.
It's absolutely. I mean, in Southeast Asia, Malaysia's probably got one of the highest levels of English literacy in the region. So it works hand in hand, works quite well.
So what kind of services do you provide from an operating point of view?
There's quite a breadth of services, everything from administrative services, so that can include bookkeeping, meeting transcription, diary management, firing out administrative emails to bit of marketing and sales support, including pre-sales research, data collection on behalf of clients, lead generation, and also certain creative work can be outsourced, graphic design, keynote presentation designs.
Okay, so it basically supporting all of the operational departments.
All the slightly lower level work that someone, say on a 35K salary here, may not be as productive carrying out certain pieces of work that can be done, say in Malaysia, at a fraction of the cost.
So how do people engage with you if they want to, they've got a project that they want to maybe outsource to you?
Yeah, so they jump onto the website, wipped.com, it's WIPPD, and click on the project inquiry button and fill out some information about their project, what they want help with, how we might be able to support them. And we're quite a flexible structure, flexible business in that regard, in terms of the breadth of the projects that we can work with. So always happy to talk to customers and speak to them, understand their pain points and see how we can really help them out. I mean, me as a founder in my journey, I know firsthand the kind of things that, the kind of tasks that are really, really tough to sort of actually get done. Sure. Because they're very much blockers of sort of getting day-to-day business activities completed. So you procrastinate a lot of these activities.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean there. All right, so the last question is, I always ask people, is if you could go back in time 20 years and speak to your younger self, what advice would you give yourself now? You'd be 13, as you said.
I'll just be a kid, 13 years old. Actually, quite funny you say that. Even at 13, I was a bit of an entrepreneur. I was riding the Pokemon craze and the sort of the uprise of mobile phones were just sort of coming to the market. And I'd often go back to Malaysia, where family's from, and I would go around the shopping centers with my parents and figure out, okay, what kind of little gadgets or toys are quite cool that I can buy from Malaysia and sell to my friends in school.
At 100% markup, 200% markup, right?
Even more than that. So there, I would retain that sort of that structure and that support that my parents gave me in terms of, okay, see what you can do in terms of buying stuff here at a low price and selling it for a profit in the UK. I've always been a bit of a lazy kid lazy student in terms of studies. I've always prioritized sports and cricket above and beyond studies. But if there's one thing I would say is sort of balance. Go spend less time playing cricket and more time studying.
And all the mothers out there and fathers out there must be glad to hear that kind of advice.
Indeed.
All right, thanks, Raj. It's been very, very good.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me on. And look forward to catching up soon.
Cheers.